God, we're on part four already. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Yeah? You like eager to run out the door and go start coding in Unity Framework?
Yeah.
Yay! How many people who haven't used Unity Framework before are now like really excited about it already? Oh my God, I wish I had a camera. That's awesome. That's great. We're supposed to plug the nerd dinner. Thursday night, 6:30 in Chinatown. It'll be fun to have a bunch of people. And you don't have to be a nerd. I'm not a nerd. I'm just a geek, but I'm going anyway. So we have the website. I'll do this again. This is just fun. This is an MVC website written by a whole bunch of guys named Scott Guthrie, Hanselman, and some other people. Some other people. Sorry, Phil Hack. I have no idea. A pet cat named Tiger? Well, how would that play into a nerd dinner website in MVC? Oh, an Oracle joke. Never knew about it. I can spell Oracle. Hey, is everybody, speaking of Oracles, everybody aware of the, it has nothing to do with Oracle database, everybody aware of the ASP.NET vulnerability right now and what it is and some workarounds to deal with it until Microsoft's got a patch out? I'm mentioning that, I think it's really important for everybody to be aware of if you got websites out there. Rachel, do you think this is silly of me? Yeah, I think the easiest thing for me is to head over to Scott Guthrie's blog, you know, another one of those guys named Scott. Because he's been writing a bunch of posts about dealing with it. So if you go to his blog, which is weblogs.asp.net/ScottGoo, you can see, I'm seeing the one, two, last three posts are about this vulnerability. It's really important. Some hackers, you know, found a vulnerability, talked about it at a big hacker conference and gave out the code for how to take advantage of it and get into ASP.NET websites and then get to servers, right? So important to be aware of, Microsoft, the ASP.NET team was unbelievable. They, as soon as it was that code was given out at the hacker conference, they started working to see what it was doing, where it was going, how it was doing, what it was doing. And by later that night, they had already some guidance out about what we can do about it. Well, people will exploit it just because it's so funny to do, right? Ha ha. So definitely take a look at this. There's read all three, but there's newer information and newer workarounds in the most recent post, so this should tide you over until there's an update that gets deployed with Windows Server IS or however that's going to work. So that's, and the reason it popped into my head when you mentioned Oracle, so thank you, Charles, is that it takes advantage of something inside of the web apps referred to as an Oracle giving out information, you know, an old wise Oracle. So definitely take a look at that. That's has nothing at all to do with Unity Framework, but it has everything to do with, what we do for a living and what we care about. So long as it popped into my head. Okay. So POCOs in Unity Framework. And you got a really good head start on this thanks to what Steve was talking about this morning. So what I'll do over the next bit of time, we'll talk a little bit more about what POCO is and show you, Steve was explaining that there's two ways to do POCO with Unity Framework, something called snapshot proxies and something called dynamic proxies. So we'll take a look at how to do both of them And we'll take a little, we'll look a little more at the T4. He spent some good time on that. So, you know, we may not even have to drill into that too much. So I could spend some more time on the POCOS or save some time for some other things we'll do later today. So POCO, just to be sure we're all clear on this, stands for plain old CLR objects. Now, there are people who think it stands for plain old C-sharp objects, but that's not true. It's CLR. And it actually comes, the term comes from the Java world because they had plain old Java objects. And as Steve was explaining about POCO, it doesn't have a reliance on other things. They're just simple objects, and they're mine. You know, when I create classes that use POCOs, they are mine. They're not dependent on entity framework. They're not dependent on some other API. They only know about things that I'm, the information I'm giving it. So I don't have to worry about if I want to use them within some other context or some other framework. They won't have this dependency coming along with them. Okay? And you may recall, I think it was, oh, well, the only other time I presented was the first session this morning when I was talking a little bit about the code generation. I opened up the class browser, right? I opened up the generated classes in the class browser, and you could see that every one of them inherited from entity object. And I talked about how that entity object gives those classes the ability to communicate with the object context, to notify it of changes for change tracking, et cetera. Right? So the task for the Microsoft, the entity framework team for .NET 4, as originally defined by a small group of people, but it was they really listened and learned a lot and did a really great job of implementing this. And one of the reasons is with that this first iteration of Entity Framework, and you know, remember we were talking about the fact that it supported database first modeling, right? The reverse engineering of the database and not model first. All the classes depended on entity object, right? So we couldn't do the POCO stuff. So, you know, they did the best they could to get it out the door in a release cycle and support as many people as many developers and development styles as they could in that first pass. But they were really missing a large community of developers. Who here was unable to use Entity Framework in its first iteration because of this kind of limitation? So just a handful of people. And that kind of demonstrates why, like, the first pass, and they said, we can't do everything yet. Let's try to help the most people that we can. And so that's, you know, that's how Entity Framework 3.5 kind of pissed off that small group of people. Anyway, the really interesting thing about all of that is with this first, with all that conversation that happened with Microsoft between these other developers saying, you know, we really need to support this style of development and to be able to do unit testing and things like that, I learned a lot. The Entity Framework team, a lot of those people learned a lot also. I learned a lot. And now that this POCO support is out, I'm really seeing, you know, for me personally, right, I'm not saying it's for everybody, but for me, I kind of see I understand. I see this light. I'm not saying I'm seeing the light and I think all of you should do it. I think this is great for me, and I think it'll be interesting for a lot of people. So for me, I really think there's so many great innovations in Entity Framework 4. It goes so much further than 3.5, but I really think this is the most important thing, the POCO support and all that we can do with it. And you're going to see the benefits of it through the rest of the afternoon, some of the other things that benefit from the POCO support, things that we can do in terms of architecting. So that's not like alt.NET preaching, is it? Because I think that flavor of style, I don't know. Dave, how would it sound coming from an alt.NET meeting? I mean, Steve. Oh, yeah? Okay. That's not what I heard. Not your, yeah, your meetings. Your meetings are okay. I heard that about your meetings. So Steve, definitely. This is Steve's area of expertise for sure, and he and I are going to talk more about this later this afternoon. And you had the benefit already of him talking about this a little bit this morning. Some of the great benefits is, for example, maybe you already have classes that, you know, you've already defined your domain model. You're using it in another application. You want to use Entity Framework. You've got classes that exist. And with Entity Framework 3.5, you couldn't really use those classes unless you made some huge modifications to them, starting with they have to inherit from Entity Object, right? So there's a nice benefit. You can use existing classes. And there's plenty of caveats to go along with that, of course, but just on a top-level view. You can do loose coupling and again, we don't have that dependency on the Entity Framework because we're not inheriting from Entity Object. The persistence ignorance is really important for so many reasons, and again, that's the classes themselves should not need to know how they get their data in from the database or how they get data back to the database. What do they have to do with data access? Classes can now be ignorant of how they're persisted to the database. And persistence, in this case, I think of persistence as pushing it into the database, but this really covers data in and data out when we talk about persistence ignorance. Unit testing. Now, I'm actually doing a talk at the New England Code Camp on Saturday called Unit Testing for Fraidy Cats Like Me, which gives you an idea of where I come from when it comes to unit testing. It's a, you know, a lot of this is a whole new world for me. And again, I'm really seeing the light of unit testing and using it more and more and, you know, trying to help people who kind of feel like me about it. It seems really daunting if, you know, you've never done it before. So anyway, with the POCO support, it also enables us to do unit testing. And then comes the architecture, and you're going to see this in the last session of the day that Steve and I do together. We're going to take an existing application and refactor it so it's architected in a more loose way with more separation of concerns, and we'll have repositories and a unit of work, and we'll have unit tests, and we'll do all that kind of stuff in there. So we couldn't do any of this stuff with before we had the POCO support. There was something called iPoco, which was kind of some support through interfaces, but the interfaces were still just wasn't quite enough. So really, you know, in kind of realistic terms, we really couldn't do this before Entity Framework 4 came out. So, you know, since we're going to spend a bunch of time on this topic, I think it's important to, you know, to talk about why we care. So I just want to set up a little bit the big picture. Is that going to go away? There we go. The big picture of what's the big difference? What did they change dramatically? So with typical Entity Framework, or should I say default Entity Framework, and also Entity Framework 3.5. So let me rephrase it. With Entity Framework 3.5 and the default with Entity Framework 4, the way things work is all of these entities, I wish this was a little closer over here. All of these entities inherit from Entity Object. The object context keeps track of the state of each of those entities. Okay? The entities don't know about their state. They just know about what their current values are. But they don't know what their values were. They don't know if they're modified. They don't know if they're new. Right? They just know, you know, first name is this, last name is that. They just know what their current values are. So, you know, an Entity Framework does all this kind of magic stuff with change tracking and doing updates for us, and we call save changes. So all of that's done because the object context keeps the state information for each of its entities. And this is any entities that it's managing. So it keeps in a little class that's actually called the object state entry. And that was kind of long, so I just refer to it as state info. Objects up there, but they're called object state entries, and it keeps the key information about each entity. It keeps a list of its original values, and that doesn't mean its values in the database. It means the values, the first time that the context became aware of the entity, what were its values? So, you know, in a, most, many cases, that's when it came out of the database and we attached it. So it happens to be the database value. But as we start talking about disconnected applications, next session, you'll see that there are plenty of other times when the context first becomes aware of an entity, but maybe it came from across the wire. It came from a client application, not from a database. So those aren't the database values. It's the values that the object had the first time the object context becomes aware of them. So when you call save changes, the context doesn't look at the entities. It just looks at all the information available in the object state entries and decides that it needs to build, you know, this update command and this insert command and another update command, and it figures out from that state info information what needs to be in the command. The last name was modified, update, you know, so it's update person set. Like, I don't know how to write SQL anymore. It's been so long, thanks to Entity Framework. You know, set last name equals Smith, where ID equals 3, right? So it just writes all those kinds of things. So this is, you know, the big challenge for doing without this, right? So the entity objects, the fact that all of these classes inherit from entity object is how the context is able to constantly keep track of that information. Right? So how can we have classes that don't inherit from entity object but still get change tracking and still be able to do updates? And some of the other things the object context is responsible for. So there are two things that Microsoft did. One, you heard about both this morning. The first one is the snapshot detection. Okay, and the way this is possible to happen is they gave the object context more smart. The object context has new capabilities and new methods. So the object context has the ability to look at the entities and see what's going on. And this makes a lot of sense when you're starting to think about architecting applications and using separation of concerns. The classes shouldn't need to know about what's in the lower part of the stack, right? The classes, there's kind of a hierarchy of how information should flow. The classes shouldn't have to know about how their information, especially if they're persistent ignorant, they shouldn't need to know about all of this stuff. So now it's possible. These classes don't have to know. Just as long as the context can find those classes, it's able to go and take a look at them and see what their current state is. And then because of that, it's able to update the object state entries and get the right information it needs. Steve showed you there's a method called detect changes. That's a new method for our object context that does that. So we'll look at some code and see how that works. But I want to also back up a little bit now and just talk about how another perspective on how Entity Framework is able to do this. The way this works is Entity Framework depends on the entity data model, right? It's very dependent on it when it's time to execute or build queries in order to execute them, and also when it returns data from the database and it populates the objects, and finally when we do updates to the database, right? So it needs to find that mod, be able to work with that model. So the way POCO works for the entity framework to be able to interact between the classes and the model. So the Entity Framework API is kind of over here interacting with not only the classes but the model, is that the classes have to have in them every single property or every single property that's in the model entity. And I'm saying that in a very specific way. Okay? I'm not saying that the classes and the model have to have all of the exact same properties. All right. I want to make sure you hear how I'm saying that. All of the properties, scalar and navigation properties in those entities have to be in the class. Now the class can also have lots of other stuff, and I'm foolishly that's not represented in this slide, and really the reason for that is just to keep the slide simple, right? But I want to make sure you're not looking at that slide and interpreting it as that they have to match equally. So I can put extra logic into my class. It doesn't have to be like a DTO, a data transfer object. I can have additional properties. I can have methods. I can have all kinds of logic. But what I must have in there is every one of the properties that are in the entity in the model has to be in there. Okay? Can you tell that's a really important rule? Making sure. So everybody is clear on that? That it's not matching exactly. It just as long as these are in here. And if they're not in here, you're not going to find out when you build. You're going to find out at runtime, because it's not until runtime when Entity Framework starts, you know, kind of interacting between the class and the model. And it's trying to figure out how is it going to do the work against the model. Well, it starts by looking at your classes, and then it looks in the model for something that matches exactly, matches in the way that it needs to match, right? Something that has all, just so long as we can find an entity that has all of these in it. I'm saying this wrong. I guess it may be the way it starts with a model. I'm not sure which one it starts with, but somehow it matches and makes sure that it finds something where all of those entity scalar properties are in the class, and then it's able to do the work that it needs to do. Now, for those of you who have used frameworks that leverage convention over configuration, where you have to follow rules, but then you can tweak it, right? When your things don't follow the rules, you can still add tweaks, like configurations, to kind of tweak the rules. That's not how things work with this POCO support. The code first allows you to do that, but with a straight POCO support, you can't configure on top of this to say, well, it's close, and here's a couple of configuration things to make you understand the rest of the things you're not finding. It has to be able to find everything it needs between this, the class and the model, okay? Steve, since I wasn't paying enough attention to what you were doing earlier today, did you go through turning off the code generation and working with the classes, the POCO classes?
I did briefly show how you needed to disable the code generation, but I didn't actually dig into looking at the individual POCO classes once they're generated.
Super. So I'm going to start then from this model. I'm really sorry. I know you guys really like to see AdventureWorks and Northwind, but it's getting to be, you know, that time of day when beer comes to mind, right? So I have a little model here that has, you know, people. It has their favorite beers. And this favorite beers is a join table, right? And it joins to beer. And beers come from certain breweries. So it's just a pretty simple model. There's a few more entities down here that probably come from AdventureWorks originally or something, right? So this is, I'm starting out with a typical default model. And here are all my generated stuff from that model. And they're all classes that, am I looking at the right one? Oh, because I'm in there. Here's customer. And customer inherits from entity object, right? So this is the default code generation that I'm getting with Entity Framework. I haven't done anything to it. So I'm focusing on snapshot entities now. So what I'm working with is I have another project up here, right? These are my POCOs. And in here is a folder. And in here are a bunch of classes. And these are not generated classes. These are classes that I wrote by hand for another application, and I brought over, all right? And that application, I'm still using the same database, so I generated an entity data model from that database and then customized that entity data model so it lined up with the way my classes were defined. So I was able to use, within reason, obviously I had to do a couple of, you know, it's not always going to be perfect, and you might have to make some adjustments to how some of this stuff is set up. But essentially, I was able to take some pre-existing classes and use, I'm going to be able to use them within the entity framework. And these follow my rules. So what I want to do is turn off, you know, I've created that model. I'm going to turn off that code generation. So I'm going to go into the model properties. Now, there's two ways of looking at the properties. One is you click on the model file. Over here, you're going to be seeing the file properties. I do this all the time where I'm looking at the file properties and expecting to see entity container properties, right? So you might I'm just pointing out in case you do that yourself and go, where are all the things I'm looking for? So I'm just going to click on the background of the designer. That will get me the container itself. And the code generation strategy is set to default, and I'm going to change it to none. And then I'll save it. I don't know if Steve showed you this. Originally, in the early betas, when that happened, the response in the solution is that this designer, this code gen file would disappear. And there were times when I'd open up a project afterwards and go, oh, my God, where did the class file go? Because I forgot I had turned off the code generation. And I must not have been the only person that did this because they now leave it in there, but instead they just put this nice little note there that says, you turned off the code generation, that's why there's no classes in here. It's okay, don't have a heart attack. So that file just kind of hang out there. So what I want to do now is be able to use these classes. These classes don't know anything about entity framework, right? So how am I going to, they're in the solution, but how am I going to make my application find those classes and work with those classes in reference to the entity framework and the model and doing all of those things. So there's one more really important thing that needs to be regenerated. As a matter of fact, I'll just point back to in your memories this morning. Do you remember when I was talking about the code generation? I opened up the class designer, the viewer, so you could see what the class is. That's when we looked at the entity objects. And I also pointed out there was one other class there. It was the object context or the entity container that inherited from object context, right? And the object context is the manager. And it manages the classes, right? It gives us all this other capability. This is entity, very specific capability for entity framework. So by turning off the code gen, not only am I not generating those classes based on the entities, I'm no longer generating that context, right? So these are my classes, but I still need a context. So that's what's missing right now, and I need a context class. Now, I'm not going to put the context in here. The context class is still going to be very much dependent on entity framework. It's going to inherit from object context so it can do all the things I need it to do. But that's okay. That's its job. That's a piece of the entity framework. I want it to do all the entity framework work. It's my classes that I want to be POCOs, right? My domain classes that I want to be POCO. So the object context actually goes in the same project with the model because entity framework needs to work with them both together. So here's my context. I've already written it. I'll go ahead and include it in the project, and then I'll open it up. And it'll look very, if you compare this to a code-generated context, it will look pretty much the same, very, very similar. So it does a few things. First, when I instantiate the context, I'm setting lazy loading on. Now, lazy loading in Entity Framework is on by default, right? And I always use the quotations default because the way it's on by default doesn't really make sense because it's a setting that's set to true. But by default, a Boolean is false, right? So how is this Boolean true by default? The reason is, this is just getting into a little aside here. In the model itself, in the properties. There's a property here called lazy loading enabled. It's not a it's a code generation. I don't know if you can see this up here. It's not really part of the schema. It's a code generation directive, so to speak. And if you open up the model itself in XML, you'll see. Did you show this already, Steve? Am I being redundant? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, so you know how that gets in there. Okay, so you know how that gets in there because it's in the XML and the code generator was reading it and setting that property to true. But we're not using the code generator anymore, so that's why I have to specifically make that true, otherwise my lazy loading won't work. Okay? I didn't disconnect live meeting. All right, and it also has all the key pieces. It has these object sets, which enable me to do my queries. So when I say from beer and context.beers, that's what I'm querying against. I'll be querying against an object set of beer types. Okay, so I'm defining those object sets, and then I've got properties here for those object sets, which essentially say for those VB people here, they just say if return the salespeople variable if it's already instantiated, if it's not nothing, and if it is, go ahead and call create object set, create an object set of that type for me and return that. Okay, so that's really important. So what's happening here now is this is my bridge between the entity framework and my POCO classes. This knows all about my POCO classes. It knows how to serve them up. Right? It knows how to interact with them. So now I've got what I need. The context has become aware of those classes. So that's a really important piece of the puzzle. So now that I've got these, I want to take a look at how some of this behavior works, some of the expectations. And I want to just reinforce here, we're still working with the snapshot POCOs, okay? So they don't have any knowledge at all about how to interact with the entity framework. And I'm going to do something funny here. I'm going to go ahead and build a solution, and it builds fine. It succeeds, and then I'm going to run it. Now I have just a little console app UI here that just interacts with my context, my entities. I'll go ahead and run it, and I'm expecting a blow up. There it is. There's my blow up. This is at runtime. The entity framework just went in the background, started looking at the XML, right? It's not looking at the XML when you're compiling. It's looking at the XML of the model and comparing it to the classes, and it noticed that something was not right, right? And come on. Oh, that's impressive. Windows Plus and Windows Key Plus and Windows 7, right? Oh, no. Come here. It's not working the way I want it to. I can never use it right. I'll just read it. It says that it was unable to do it. The required property title does not exist on the type, right? So it looked at the model, right? It found the matching entity, because it just lines up the class names, right? Said, okay, here's the class, and there's an entity that matches that name. And then it looked at all of the properties defined, scalar and navigation properties defined in the entity in the model, and then looked at the class and found that one of them is missing. Title, very specific. Okay, so I just wanted you to see, it won't tell you that when you're building, right? So you have to test to make sure all this stuff works properly, you've got things set up properly. And the other thing is I'm throwing in an extra property just to show you that it'll all work, even though I've got an extra property in the class that's not something in the model. Is that cool? Because, you know, I just said it works that way, but you want to see that. You've got a question? Oh, why was the title private? The title was private because when I was doing this particular demo at another at a user group, somebody said, well, do they have to be public or private? Does it matter? And I said, I don't know. Let's see. And I changed it to private, and it still works. So they don't have to be public. They can be public or private. So you really have a lot of – it's your class, and you have a lot of control over it. I'm glad you asked that question. Thanks. So now I'm using the POCOs. I'm using that context. I'm from Vermont, so I have to call it them artisanal classes, right? I handcrafted them. I handwrote them. We have a lot of artisanal cheese and chocolate, so we have artisanal code, too, now in Vermont. So I'm just doing a simple query, and, okay, yes, it works, right? My POCOs still work. Everything's working the way I expect it to be, and I have a person. Willie Lohman, ever heard of one of your user group members? All right. So now that I know they're working, let's see how they work with some of the other things, my other expectations with the entity framework. The first is lazy loading. You saw that I had lazy loading enabled, right? Or did anybody remember I had lazy loading enabled in the code? So let's go ahead and find out what the favorite beers are. And I'm not going to do a query. I'm just going to let lazy loading pull those in. I'm just going to say I want them, so lazy loading will go, whoops, better go out and get them. Okay, so let's see how many favorite beers we have. It's null. I didn't get any. And that's because my POCO classes, they don't know anything about lazy loading. Right? All the lazy loading features, all that knowledge about how to do lazy loading and when to do it is in the context. When I'm using entity objects, they have the knowledge they need to go and talk to the context and trigger the lazy loading. But my classes, I don't have any code in there, right? You saw them, they were just really simple. They had getter and setters, and that was about it. There was no code in there that said, oh, if this is null, go ahead and, you know, trigger a query and go out and get them, right? So, you know, how do I get the best of both worlds here? Well, there's a couple of ways. I'll show you one now. I'm actually just going to skip over that logic. Here's how you can you're not going to get lazy loading, but here's how you can load after the fact without writing an extra query when you're using the POCOs. There's a new method. Again, I said that the context got a lot of new things in it. Another one of the new things is this method called load property. And there's a couple of ways to express it. There's a couple of overloads for the parameters. I'm using generics for this one. So what I'm saying is load the property of this person instance that I have and the property that I want. And IntelliSense, I'm using generics and the Lambda. The IntelliSense, I can just type that out and it feeds me the properties while I'm typing it. But go ahead and the property that I want you to load is the favorite beers property. And it will go and do not a lazy load, but an explicit load. As a matter of fact, if you're used to Entity Framework 3.5, when lazy loading wasn't an option, we still had the ability to do explicit loading with a load method, although we still had it. That load method was on the navigation property. So we would say person.favoritebeers.load. But that's because, you know, all these classes knew how to do all those things. Again, my classes don't know how to do that. So the onus is now on the object context to make that happen. So that's one way to do that. Let me show you another way to do that. There's a couple of tricks we have. Was there a hand up over here?
What's the method for preventing a certain object to load within the context?
Oh, that's a great question. Dave asks, what's the method for preventing something to load, something from loading when you're doing this? I love that question because this is one of the complaints about when Microsoft said, okay, here's how we're doing POCO support and here's how we're doing lazy loading. A lot of people complained, how about the fact that the lazy loading is controlled by the context, not that you can define in your classes, where a lot of people define the lazy loading in the classes because they say, I want addresses to lazy load, but I don't want favorite beers to lazy load. And what the very next line of code will show you how to do that. And it's just, you know, really looking at something from a different perspective. So another new thing in Entity Framework is this ability at runtime to create some dynamic classes, some dynamic wrappers for our POCOs. So our POCOs are still POCO when we're designing against them, but at runtime, they'll get some extra smarts. So what I'm going to do is, favorite beers here, and here's how it works. I'm going to make the property virtual. Just that property, favorite beers. What will happen now is at runtime, Entity Framework will see that it's a virtual property, and for VB, that's overridable. That's the same as overridable. Entity Framework will see that, and it will spin up a wrapper around that navigation property. And it will turn it into, the wrapper will be an entity collection, and the entity collect, it's actually an I-related end. Entity collection inherits from it, and entity reference inherits from it. So it will become an entity collection and inherit end, and it will know how to lazy load, right? So to answer your, so we get the lazy loading, and the cool thing is to answer David's question, is that I can actually use this to say, lazy load this, don't lazy load that. I can define it right in the class. I still need to have lazy loading enabled on the context for the whole thing to work, but I can actually restrict that in the class this way. So let me run that little bit of code again. Have my beer. Oh, that must not be me. I'm very indecisive. I have more than one favorite of everything. The lazy loading worked on favorite beers. Now, I don't happen to know if we have multiple addresses here, but I didn't turn lazy loading on addresses. I have to think fire starter. I can't show every single thing. Do you believe me that if there were addresses, this lazy loading wouldn't happen because I didn't set the virtual property?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. So I'll just move on. Okay. So the next thing I'll do is, I'll just skip over this little bit. Sorry. Wait. I skipped over one thing too many. Let me just get back to the point of where I wanted to be in the debugger, and then I'm going to ask you what your question is. There it is. Okay. Question.
Is there a way to upload once you load them and then say, okay, I load them the way I wanted to do it, my volunteers have 1,000 users now, get rid of it, keep moving it?
Oh, so the question is, after I've loaded these, whether I've lazy loaded them or explicitly loaded them, how do I get rid of them?
Yeah.
You could, they're just object instances, so you could set them to null. You can't set the whole collection of favorite beers to null. You can't say dot favorite beers equals null. You can't do that, and you can't do anything like it's the entity collection is just a collection where you can add and remove things one at a time. Right, and they're all in there. Right. They're all being managed by the context. So, well, actually, the question is, when you say you want to unload them, do you want to unload them from memory, or do you want do you want to say, oh, that's not my favorite beer anymore?
Out of memory,
just set them to set, you have to set each one of them to null. But you know what you can do? Write a little method, and then call the method. You can write that in, it's your class, write it in your class. Or create another class that knows how to do that. You know, it's your code. So it's not an entity. There's no entity framework solution for that. It's just .NET code, regular .NET API stuff you would use.
No, I was just being nice. I can tell the concept. Just temporary. Within the piece of work that I'm working on, I'm only going to use now .NET.
Right. You get the same problem whether using Entity Framework or data sets or any other APIs. Okay. Was there another one? Okay. All right. So another important behavior of the context and in Entity Framework is change tracking. So I'm going to go ahead and change the last name of this person instance. Now, normally, when I've done that and I'm inheriting from Entity Object, Entity Object would notify the context would update the object state entry for that person, and then if I call save changes, it'll be aware of it and be able to take care of it. So because I'm working in POCOS, that doesn't happen. I can look in the context, quick watch, object state manager. Now, here's a view that you, C-sharp and Visual Basic debuggers are very different. Some of this information I'm going to depend on, rely on here, you can't see when you're debugging into the Object State Manager and DB this way. You have to do something else, just as an FYI. As a matter of fact, when I wrote the first edition of the book, I really have been programming in DB forever. So I really wrote the book against VB and then went back and added in all the C-sharp samples. So all my debugger windows and everything were in Visual Basic. So there was all this stuff I wasn't seeing in the debugger that you can see in the C-sharp debugger. And then the second book, I wrote the whole thing against C-sharp. So all my debugger windows were in there. And I was like, oh, that's easier. Which is too bad. As a matter of fact, maybe they're exposing more of this in the VB debugger. So what I wanted to get to is in this debugger, exposes a private method or a private property called modified entity store, right? That should have in there knowledge of how many entities the context is managing that have been modified. And we know there's one, right? I just modified it. But it's not aware of it. It's still being picked up down here in the unchanged entity store. Okay? So there's two in there because there's a favorite beer also. Right? So that's why you see two. So it's not aware of it at all. So Steve talked about another one of the new methods in Entity Framework of the object context called detect changes. Detect changes tells the context, this is when it's going and taking another snapshot of the entities. Go and see what's going on in all those entities that I'm managing and update all my object state entries based on whatever you find. So I call detect changes, and then if I go back to the quick watch and scroll, object state manager, and go to modified, now it knows one's modified, and there's only one left that's unchanged. So detect changes did that. Now, there's something important to understand about doing that. We need detect changes to be called in order for the object context to know what to do when I call save changes, right? And what a drag that would be to have to remember when you're coding to put detect changes in there every single time you call save changes. So you don't have to, because the default save changes in Entity Framework 4 calls internally, it calls detect changes for you. Okay, so you don't have to remember that. But there might be plenty of other reasons why you need to explicitly call detect changes. But if it's for the sake of just saving when you're doing everything by default, you don't have to worry about that in this case, because it will make that call for you. Okay? So I showed you this trick about using the virtual keyword so that at runtime a wrapper will be created around the favorite beers entity, so it becomes an Entity Framework object that knows how to talk to the object context. It's the same concept for getting the other style of POCOs. We did this. This is usually how I present. I've got all these slides, and by the time I get to the slide, I'm like, oh, I already talked about this. I already talked about that. So we did all of that. So there's another, the other way of having the POCO support or taking advantage of the POCO support. For a lot of people, it's kind of the best of both worlds. You get your POCOs, but you also get the behaviors that you would normally get with an entity object without having to inherit from entity object. Those behaviors are the notification to the object context, right, so that we don't have to have the object context do all that work, and also the lazy loading. Question? Yeah. So the question is about how the POCOs work when you have related objects, whether it's a many-to-many relationship, which is what we're looking at here with between person and favorite beers, right? That's a result of a many-to-many, or even just a regular relationship if we had a person to addresses. And when we're using the POCOs, do we still get all of that relationship stuff happening? If, say, I was inserting a new address, would it know how to get the foreign key when we do this in the database? Will it get the foreign key? And the answer is yes. You'll still get all of that kind of behavior. There's one thing, interesting thing, and this is not with what I'm about to show you, but this is with the snapshot entities. What it doesn't do by default is it doesn't know how to do bidirectional relationships. Okay, so let's not think about the many-to-many. It gets too complex. But with the addresses, if I have a person and an address, and I say address.person equals this person instance, if I go and say, you know, what is address.person, it'll return the person instance. But if I look at the person.addresses collection, that address won't be in there because I don't have bidirectional. It doesn't automatically do that. Normally with entity objects, that happens automatically. Okay? So detect changes will do that for you. So if you have all these relationships and you want to be able to use them bidirectionally in your code, detect changes will do that relationship fix up for you. Or you could explicitly just write some code in your class that does that for you, which is typical. But, you know, that's, you know, how we do it anyway, right, in a lot of cases. So entity object has been doing that for us all along. We get that bidirectional relationships. Can you repeat the question? Sorry. Yes. So you don't explicitly have to call detect changes. The question was that I had said that save changes will call detect changes for me, and how does that play into the bidirectional relationships? No. You're asking detect changes will fix up those relationships. How does that play into the save changes? It just does. It will happen then also. So how... And that's actually important. That's important because if I do it the other way and I say person dot addresses, you know, if I add the address to the person addresses collection, I'm not in any way really kind of making that foreign key get set in the address. Like address dot person ID is not being set when I do that with a POCO. That won't happen. So detect changes will take care of that, and even if you don't call it, if you call save changes, it calls detect changes, and it fixes up all of that. So, yeah, so the example I presented first, it didn't really matter because I was already studying that. So Entity Framework with the foreign keys, you still have the navigation properties. If you set the navigation property, it'll automatically fix the foreign key. If you set the foreign key, it'll automatically fix the navigation, just as an FYI. It keeps all of those things in sync. All right, so with the dynamic, the next way of doing the POCOS is the dynamic proxies. Like I said, this is kind of depending on your needs, this is kind of like the best of both worlds. You get your POCO classes that don't know anything about the entity framework, but at runtime, you get this behavior that you can depend on, which is the behavior that entity object gives you, the most essentially the notification to the object context, plus you get the lazy loading because you're getting all these what happens is you get runtime wrappers not just around those navigation properties but around the whole class, and I'll show you that. And then at runtime, now we get that benefit of the notification to the object context, so we don't have to call detect changes, we get lazy loading, we get all that stuff we would get with entity object. And I just said that, right? So that happens at runtime, right? So I've got my simple class, but at runtime, I get all these other things. Let's actually wait a minute there. Let me run over to this solution. Now, in this solution, I'm going to go back to the project that has my entities. I have another folder here, which is excluded from the project. I'm going to include that folder, and I'm going to exclude the folder that has the entities you were just working with. These entities, for example, person, every single property is marked as virtual, except for one. Who can tell me what's different about this one? Why is that one special? This is still going to work. I'm going to get what I want, but I didn't mark every single one. Is that everybody's hand? Right. It's not one of the properties in the entity in the model. Okay, so the rule is that all of the model properties have to be virtual. All that other logic you might add to your class, it doesn't matter at all. And again, this is another thing I learned when I presented to the user group, because I had been saying, this is what I had learned, every property has to be marked virtual. And they said, what if you have something that, something extra? And I was like, I don't know, let's see. We took a vote, like who thinks it's going to work, who thinks it's not going to work. Guess what? I said, I didn't think it's going to work. I'm really sure Microsoft said every single property. Well, guess what? It works. So that's why. And that's why I have that in there, so we'll remember to bring that up. But I don't know if you're going to get a chocolate bar for answering that question. Oh, is anybody, Rachel or Peter, do you know if the books got here? Okay, because she said they'd be here Friday. All right. Well, guess what? We can always give away ebooks. We can give away more ebooks than we can of physical books anyway, and then I'll just use the books. You can have the books for a user group meeting coming up or something. All right. So what I'm going to do is use this project now with my virtual classes that will create the proxies, and I'll go ahead and run this same code, and we'll just see what the difference in behavior is. Is it like 6 o'clock already or something? It's sad. I really love talking about this stuff. It's so fascinating. All right, so here's the first thing I want to show you. This, like, freaked me out the first time I saw it. So hold on to your seats. So here's the person I got back. Look at. Oh, it's so ugly, right? The nice thing is my person class is beautiful. It's just a nice little simple class. It's all POCO. At runtime, it's really ugly. At runtime, it's got the wrapper.
The only thing that changed by making every property virtual.
Right. But not every property. I know. I need to be careful. Okay, so yeah, the best of both worlds. So this is a dynamically generated class that's wrapping around the person, right? It's a system, it's a dynamic proxy. Look, it's not of person, but it's of, like, this blah, blah, blah. It's not a GUID. It's some kind of a hash. I can't remember. Anyway, so that was really dynamically generated there. It has, you know, all of the person properties in there, but also it has all of this. Now, this is not turning, we did not just turn this into an entity object. I'm not suddenly at runtime inheriting from entity object. It's completely different. It's a, you know, dynamic proxy is not an entity object. Dynamic proxy happens to have a lot of the same features of an entity object, but it's completely different class, okay? And you can see here's a change tracker, there's a wrapper, there's a relationship manager. We drill in here. This is a base, so that's the person is the base. Inside the change tracker, you know, we've got entity state. We've got an understands. It's got things related to, you know, all of the things that we're used to seeing with the entity objects. So it has all of that guts at runtime. And because of that, I've got the lazy loading, right? It's, again, not too pretty, but this is essentially an entity collection now, right? The navigation property is an I collection in my class. But at runtime, it's got a wrapper. It's now an entity collection. Entity collection inherits from I-related, and it knows how to do lazy loading and relationship management and all this kind of stuff. Right? Question?
Now, everything always seems to take two episodes. One is that entity can create all the classes. In fact, can you create my couple of classes? Put everything virtual so that I get
the best of both worlds. So what's the benefit of using the dynamic proxies over the POCOs or the pure snapshots? Oh, what's the difference, the benefits, comparing the benefits between using the out-of-the-box entity objects versus the POCOs, the dynamic proxy POCOs? The benefit is all of those benefits I listed earlier and that Steve talked about even earlier today about using the POCOs in your application. I'm still writing my application with those POCO classes. My classes are POCOs. My classes are simple and pure, right? They don't inherit from entity object. So I've got these nice classes, but I'm still getting all of those benefits because of the dynamic proxy. I'm getting all the benefits of the entity object, which is all that interaction with the context and the lazy loading and all of that. What's the harm of your entity inheriting from entity object? Well, the first is having a lot of people screaming at you. Some people named Scott, not Guthrie. It's really a matter of style. It's really a matter of development style. Many people are entity objects, they're very happy to just work with the defaults and just work with it out of the box, and it works great. I've actually had a lot of discussions with Ward Bell, who is a brilliant guy, and he definitely goes, does a lot of very high-level architectural stuff. And he works for a company called, oh, God, here I'm on live meeting. And Ward, I'm sorry. It's just been a long day. What's the name of the company? They have this incredible framework. Idea Blade. It's in my brain. So he works for a company for Idea Blade, and they have a framework that actually they brought Entity Framework into it, and they're using entity objects. He's like, why are you always saying you have to use POCOs? And I'm not saying you have to use POCOs. I happen to like them now a lot because there are a lot of challenges. There's also, this is another thing. You should, if you compared my first book with the second book, you'll see there was a lot of challenges with doing certain kinds of development when you're using entity objects, and those challenges are gone with the POCOs. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anything related to entity gates, you can work out
There's no, the question was anything related to caching in here. There's no built-in caching. However, if you look on Code Gallery, which is code.msdn.com, Jarek Kowalski, who's on the, well, he's just moved to a different team, but he was on the Entity Framework team. He wrote something called the iTracing and iCaching Provider. It is brilliant. And, well, he's brilliant. And the caching provider allows you to have caching, do caching. Pardon me? For it's written specifically for Entity Framework. And it allows you to pick if you want to use Ncache or something else. Allows you to pick. I'm really anticipating, and I'm not pussyfooting because I don't know. I would expect that Microsoft would put this into a future version of Entity Framework. I mean, somebody at Microsoft wrote it. All right, but I do have to move on. Can we, yeah, maybe do it during the break. Okay. Oh, yeah, good question. Is the proxy class serializable? You'll actually see this a little in the next presentation, but it is not. And so here's why. I am a bigger fan of the snapshot POCOs than of the dynamic proxies because I do a lot of development with services, okay? And if you try to pass those down the wire, the dynamic proxies, you have to turn off the lazy loading. Otherwise, you're going to get every row in your entire database back because, oh, this touches this, let's get it. Oh, this lazy loading, right, is just going to keep bringing everything as it's trying to serialize, you know, one little person object. You get the whole database. And then the other is dynamic proxies. And that just is a huge fail. It just completely blows up, and it will give you this crazy message about something about an image file, right? And then, you know, and then you'll spend like 4 hours trying to Google that error message, which has nothing to do with the problem is. And anyway, and so essentially you'll end up having to turn off lazy loading and the dynamic proxy generation just before you send stuff down the wire. So I just don't, you know, I'm turning it off all the time anyway. I'm not using it. But in other types of applications, it's a really big, it's great. There's a lot of great reasons to use it, but for in services because of the serialization, it just can't be serialized. Can you tell I was the one who went this through that 3 hours? what is this? Doesn't make any sense. Okay, moving on. We got lazy loading, so we don't need to do this. It's happening anyway. Oh, and then the other thing is I'll go ahead and make that change. And then immediately, without having to call detect changes, I'm sure you can guess where I'm going with this. Object, quick watch. This always makes me giggle. Made somebody else giggle too. I heard that. So it recognizes something's modified in there, so I don't have to worry about detect changes, right? So all of that stuff just works, and you get the bidirectional relationship fixed up. You get all of that, all that you expect to happen with any objects will happen here. But yeah, that big caveat with the serialization. So I think let's just see what else I have in here. Okay. So rules for, oh, come on, are my speakers off? We had a little fun joke in here for you. Doesn't matter. I just go back to the slide and do my talk and be done with it. Okay. We had a thunderbolt. We had a kaboom because it's like the seven commandments. Thank you. That's all I needed. Just a little. Anyway, so these are the rules for doing the proxies, right? You have to have the virtual. Does navigation, the collections, the ones that are pointing to a child collection, a many, they need to be iCollections. This one will get you over and over again, and there's no nice little exception or runtime compilation or anything that's going to tell you you're doing it wrong. It just won't work, and you won't even know. In some cases, you won't even – oh, here's the issue. If you're using these and you want to create a new person on the fly, so how do you create a new person? Var person equals new person, right? And then you say, okay, context.people.addObjectPerson and save changes. Guess what? That person will never go in the database. And no, you're not going to get an error. Entity Framework doesn't know that you did something wrong. It doesn't think you did anything wrong. It just thinks you did what you wanted to do. Right? So the problem is that by creating, when you're using the dynamic proxies and you instantiate the person, you're not instantiating the dynamic proxy. You're not getting the dynamic proxy. You're just getting the person. And so you're not going to get all of the effect that you're going for. When you add that object, it's not going to understand what to do with it. Now, if you had a plain old snapshot POCO and you said new person and then people.addObjectPerson, that all works. But when you're working with the dynamic proxies, you have to say create object in order to instantiate new objects that you want to be aware of their wrapper. It'll create the wrapper that way. Okay, that's a big one because really you're not going to find that out unless you do some good testing. You won't know that. You won't realize that otherwise unless you're doing testing. Classes can't be sealed, right? They're virtual. They need the entity framework at runtime needs to be able to go in and read things and figure it out. So you can't seal the classes or properties and blah, blah, blah. Right? Lots of rules. Well, only 7. Not so bad. Okay. I was going to talk about T4. Steve saved me some time. The point here was, the nice thing about the entity objects was they were generated for me, right? Now we're talking about these POCOs, and I'm like having to write all this code by hand. So we really don't have to because we do have the T4 generation, which you've seen already. And Steve, I believe, showed you the templates that you can get very easily from the code gallery. You don't even need to go to the code gallery to get them. Did they already see this, Steve? Okay, tools, extension manager. Well, you can't read in my mind. I already have them. But you can go in you can get to Visual Studio gallery this way by going to the extension manager. I've already installed these things, but you can go to the online gallery and find them. So I've got I've got two different POCO templates. One for C# to do the default POCOs, and that default POCO template will create dynamic proxies. They're actually a little more complicated than what I've done already. But they're all marked, all the properties will be marked virtual, right? So you'll get that. So what I do is I take that T4 template and I edit it down a little more to get the classes to be the way I want them. I mean, that's the whole beauty of having the templates and the code gen. And also I have an editor that I'm using. It's the Tangible T4 editor. There's another one. I don't know if they've got it out yet, which is a shame. It was, pardon me? Clarius. Yeah, Clarius had one. I don't know if they have it yet. Your question. If I have a method body in my class, I didn't know that.
It doesn't actually wrap the property. It actually wraps the field level access.
I gotta go change my book. See ya. I didn't know that. Wow. So I don't know if everybody got that. The point is, if in your class that's the virtual class, the class that you've marked everything virtual, If you're not doing, you know, this, right, if you actually have logic in your getter or your setter, that logic is not going to get carried through when you do it with the dynamic proxy. The dynamic proxy wrapper is going to ignore your logic, and you won't get that logic executed. Oh, my gosh. Oh, data points column coming up. Wow. Oh, God. I'm, like, so embarrassed. I know I didn't write the entity framework, but I can't believe I can't believe there's something about entity framework I didn't know. Somebody had a question over here. I have no idea. It would take some, great. It would take, well, I don't know. There are some really smart, unbelievably brilliant people on the entity framework team. I hate when people look at entity framework and go, "Look, people are stupid." I'm like, they are not. You know, they don't do everything the exact same way you do. Anyway, so it might have been the short development time they had for getting. I wasn't saying that you were saying that. It was just it may have been the short development time cycle they had. It may have been the person responsible for that is stupid, but I don't think so. Or maybe there's some other challenges in there that we just don't happen to be aware of. That may be. I'm too fried to figure it out right now. Anyway, sounds like a topic for interesting discussion. All right, so you saw the T4, and I'm not. The point here was just to let you know that. The point here was to let you know that you don't have to do all that by hand. You could start with the default entity object generating template and edit the heck out of that, but that's like crazy. There's so much in there, and I've done it. That was a lot of work. But now that the T4 template for the POCO is out, I start with that, and then I just modify it, customize it more, and not customize it only to remove behavior. I can also add behavior, add logic to that. That add logic I want in every one of the classes. Okay. That's it. Now, what time is it? It's 2:30. We've got two more sessions.